This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
This week on a special bonus episode of Meat in 3, we find out why the bacon, egg, and cheese, that classic bodega sandwich, is popping up on menus of New York's trendiest restaurants.
We did a few iterations of it, and I was trying to fancify it. We tried the sausage, egg, and cheese, and then we tried to put shamula sauce on it. We used feta cheese, and we just like taking ingredients of the Mediterranean, if you will, and try to infuse it. But for me, it was like a car wreck.
Tune in to hear about the wild journey of the bacon, egg, and cheese, from deli to fine dining, on Meat in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. We're back.
What up, Bushwick?
We're back in Bushwick. It's been really fun being in Sunset Park, Industry City, but so glad to be back in the studio.
Sweet home.
Wood panels, boars.
The sweet, sweet smell of cheeses from Switzerland.
I'm Kat Johnson, the communications director here at Heritage Radio Network, and I'm here with my co-host Katie Mosman-Wadler.
Hey, Kat. Happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. And Hannah Forden.
Shalom, Bushwick. I'm just so happy to be here.
We're down one Alana Glazer, but up one Bushwick.
I know, and I'm not even having a good hair day today. We're down two Alana Glazers. But I have a feeling that what we need to feel better is sitting right in front of us.
It's right in front of us. We've got cheese.
The answer has been here all
along. We've got cider. But we'll get to that. Hold on a minute. Thanks to Amanda Wang, our engineer.
Hi.
We're so happy to be back in the studio with you, Amanda.
I know. I took that 1 week off. It was a little bit weird.
Well, yeah. You were away and we were away, and it's just been a while. It's nice to have you back.
Thank you. Likewise.
We also have our other glorious team member, Liza Hamm, in the studio with us. What a rare treat.
Hello. Thank you. It feels rare, and it feels like a complete treat.
It's about to get rarer.
Couldn't agree more. Our guest today, wow. This is the third year in a row that we've had the lovely Allison Lacey in the studio with us, bringing us some cheese.
Yay! Good to be back. So happy.
We also have, returning to the studio, Dan Pucci, cider aficionado.
Happy to be back as well. It's awesome.
Is that the right title for you?
I have no idea.
Me either.
Sir Dan Pucci.
International man of cider.
Sir Dan Pucci.
Yes.
Yeah, as you wish.
As you wish. Thank you for that reference.
Tomboy.
We also have the amazing, amazing Sarah Flynn from Yellow Magnolia Restaurant, and we're going to talk about our gala in just a minute, but welcome, Sarah.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
So stoked. We also have Amy Curry. Hi. Friend of the network.
Hi, Amy.
Hi. So happy to be here.
Okay. That's everyone, right? Did I miss anybody?
We're all here. Hiding?
Somebody under the table.
Someone's in the new bar that Souther built for us with glass doors. Nice. Whoa, fancy now.
Did he build it?
Brought. Installed.
Is he a woodworker as well as a cocktail genius?
Right in all his free
Matt
time,
was the one who installed that.
I helped. Wow.
Well, it's a big improvement over the pile of alcohol that used to be sitting on a DJ coffin case in the back of the studio.
We're growing up so fast.
I know. College is over.
Oh,
10 years old.
I know.
Okay. Well, we're going to get to the cheese and the cider in just a moment. It smells amazing in here. If there was only smeller radio, you guys would understand. But first, we have a few headlines we want to share with you. Wait. First, let's do some announcements. We got to talk about the gala.
Yes.
The gala is right around the corner, guys.
November 11th.
Sarah, how are you feeling about the gala?
I'm pretty excited.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited.
We are so excited, and we're so excited to taste. Can you tease what you're going to be cooking up for the gala?
Sure. I'm still playing with it a little bit because this is really one of the fun opportunities for us to play.
But I'm doing a vegan risotto, essentially, but a play on, like, a cacio e pepe served out of a Parmesan wheel, except it's going to be out of a gourd.
Yes!
So it's going to be grains. I just ordered some purple barley, which is, I don't know.
We're about to find out. I didn't know that was a thing.
So me neither. And then my kitchen manager and line cook at the cafe was like, could we try this? And I was like, sure we can. And so that's part of the reason why I'm still a little vague, because it arrives tomorrow. Mm-hmm. our purveyors didn't have it, so Amazon is the win.
Cool. And,
So we're going to play with it. I don't know if it's going to end up just being, like, barley that looks black, you know what I mean? Or, like, forbidden rice.
Yeah.
Or if it's going to actually be really cool.
I love forbidden rice, so I'm very into this idea.
Me too. And I think it'll be really cool. Now, we'll see what we play, and then we'll figure it out. And then we're going to do a zucchini blossom cream, essentially, for finishing the risotto, and some nutritional yeast, and some squash, and filling, etc. And it should be essentially just as good as a regular risotto. And ambitiously, I would like to serve it out of mini hollowed-out pumpkins.
Yes.
You're a goddess.
Are you thinking one?
Wait, like, let's not bite off too much before
we should be, like, one per person?
Uh-huh. I still have to convince my butcher to help me do it.
Yeah. Okay, I did this once. I made 40 little pumpkins with soup in them, but my downfall was I decided to, like, roast them all inside of the grill.
No,
but that I don't recommend.
No,
that.
I think they have to stay, quite frankly, raw, and they actually need a day or two to dry out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a couple of years ago, actually, my old sous chef, who actually used to work here, Ryan Keelan, was like, are we going to hollow out pumpkins like your mom made us do for Thanksgiving or like 10 years ago? And I was like, we are. And you just signed yourself up for a job.
So
get ready for pumpkin carving.
You weren't sufficiently scarred from Thanksgiving to have
I am. I just have decided this time I'm going to use it to my own advantage. As opposed, my mother also, meanwhile, had us hollow out like 50 pumpkins via a catering company for her. And then decided she wasn't going to use them.
No!
I swear my life.
Oh, my God. No, these are redemption pumpkins.
No, these are redemption pumpkins.
Oh,
so
my God.
We'll see. Look, 200 is a lot. But I think we're going to knock it out.
Oh, my
I
darling.
Have like
it's
70.
300.
Yeah.
No, you can do 200, though.
I was gonna say, and the hollowed gourd idea just went out.
Not everyone has to have a pumpkin. Only
the first 50 VIP guests.
Yeah, VIP hour gets their
pumpkin.
This is the
and then everybody else gets like a regular.
Yeah. Or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org if you would like to volunteer to empty out some squash.
I was just about to say, if you guys can rustle up the manpower to do it, we're done. Like, everybody gets pumpkins.
I mean, in all seriousness, we do have an army of volunteers, so you know to hit us up for them, right?
I mean, I do now.
Okay, yes.
I think it's going to happen. I'm pretty excited, guys. This is excellent, because this would make my idea execute more smoothly.
It's amazing. So if you want to find out if Chef Sarah Flynn hollows out 300 pumpkins...
200.
Go to heritageradionetwork.org/gala. Get your tickets. In addition to all of the delicious things we just talked about, we're going to have... 12 other amazing chef stations. We will have special cocktails from Damon Bolte and Souther Teague and Dave Arnold. We're going to have
and
cider.
And another guy.
And what's his name?
Dave Arnold's juice bar. Yes. He's making gin and juice and mezcal and juice. That's all I got out of him. Dave Arnold's juice bar.
You had me a gin and juice, so like, we're good.
Sounds great.
Yeah, class act.
We got wine. We got cider. We got beer. We got natural wine. We got
so much cheese
without alcohol.
Cheese.
Yeah. We have so much cheese.
I'm really in it.
So much meat.
Allison, tell us about the cheese.
Right now or at the party?
Wait, the party.
The party cheese or the cheese in front
party
of us?
Cheese.
We're doing
party
fun,
cheese.
Right?
Party
cheese.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, you just emailed me. You're like, you need cheese. I'm like, let's do raclette. I'm
yes.
Like,
let's do it.
Nice and showy.
I was like, can you help us? You're like, I will man the grill. And I was like, that's what I love to hear.
I love raclette so much. I had it at my baby shower. Like, we had a theme, rattles and raclette. It was just like... You gotta have the big grill, so we'll have the big grill out. We're gonna be scraping on bread, I presume.
From Colson Patisserie.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So we'll get some nice bubbly cheese over your bread. Oh my God, it just sounds so wonderful already.
Yes.
So yeah,
the
nice Emmy raclette will be at the party. I'll be there. Come see me.
And I will be at the raclette station if anyone needs me.
Yeah, she's like, buy pumpkins.
Literally, good luck, guys.
Someone deal
you know
with
what
us.
Would be so cool would be you could fill up a pumpkin with raclette.
I may have to do it.
That's the after party.
I think we can probably place these next to each other.
I think that would be really
We've
awesome.
We've done fondue and pumpkins, too.
Ooh. I'm into it. I'm honestly just in it for the cheese.
I also just love, like, last time that we had a meeting with you, Allison, the meeting involved, like, first step is putting some raclette on some potato chips, and then we can talk. But, like, I know, it's like, we really, you know, stressful starts. So, I know.
That's too good.
It got hot in here.
All good things must start with cheese.
And we have, you know, we obviously food and drink, but, like, also... It's going to be just absurdly fun. We have a lot of, like, fun activities this year at the gala. Also, all the Hall of Famers will be there. So if there's anybody on our list you want to meet, which should be all of them, come. It's going to be so beautiful. And the space, you know, it's the most beautiful room.
One final thing I want to tease is that Katie, Hannah, and I just locked in a really big celebrity to attend. And we can't tell anybody who he is, but he's going to be available for photo ops all night long. And so you're going to want to come to the gala to get your photo taken with maybe the biggest celebrity in HRN's history.
Probably.
That's all I'm going to say.
I'd say he's been on more shows on the network than anyone else.
That's fair.
Right?
That's fair.
Not an easy feat.
He's a man of few words, but man, is he prolific.
Okay. And he's got a face for radio.
He does. Okay.
Too many hints.
That's your teaser. We're going to have to, like, take an excerpt of that and, like, blast it everywhere. Okay, one other thing I wanted to announce is that this weekend is Raw Wine. Sunday and Monday, the Raw Wine Fair is taking place in Bushwick, and we are partnering once again to help them produce the Speaker's Corner. Our very own Sam Ben Ruby is going to be doing two of those interviews at the Speaker's Corner at Raw Wine on Monday, October 28th. So if you're at Raw, come and see us. And then if you can't make it to Raw Wine in Brooklyn, we were going to have all those speakers' corners, panels, and interviews recorded for you to listen to later. You should come to Raw. I'm just saying.
Come to
it's
Raw.
Really fun.
Okay. Headlines?
Headlines.
We have a few, and then we're going to get to the cheese of it.
Food policy!
United States Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue recently made a lot of farmers angry. At a time when small dairy farms are going out of business at unprecedented rates and small farms producing other crops are also struggling, Perdue made a comment that suggested the situation was par for the course. He said, in America, the big get bigger and the small go out. Bye, Sonny. Tune into episode 376 of the Farm Report to learn about the current challenges faced by American small farmers and see what that really looks like and how to help small farms survive.
And for more food policy news, What Doesn't Kill You, episode 296 has the scoop on the lobbying group you've never heard of. ILSI is a secretive group that is deployed by major food companies to push their agenda in legislative matters.
And on Eating Matters, episode 145, Mark Winney, hope I said that right, joins host Jenna Liu to discuss his new book, Food Town USA, 7 Unlikely Cities That Are Changing the Way We Eat. That's where he features the inspiring work that people across the country are doing to leverage the power of healthy and sustainable food to revitalize communities ravaged by disappearing industries and histories of inequity. That sounds absolutely fantastic. And we talk a lot about how food should be healing the world. And
it's not.
And it's not.
And there's work to be done.
Let's just say that. Okay, well, I'm feeling like food's healing me a little bit right now. So, Allison, can you tell us about the cheese that you brought with you today? And, I mean, wow, oh, wow, did you set it up in a beautiful way. Oh,
and how do we want to talk about the cider? Should we do cider and cheese, like, pairings together?
Did you guys coordinate?
One by one.
We did not.
Let's do
we
cheese.
We can figure it out.
And let's do cider.
Let's do live pairings.
You tell us a cheese, Dan tells us a cider.
This is a choose-your-own-adventure type of activity right now. So just a basic overview of the cheeses that we have here. So the majority of our cheeses on the table here are from our 22-million-year-old Kulpuk cave. Yes, that's right. 22 million years old. And the cheese hasn't been in there for 22 million years, but it is the perfect environment for cheese to age because it's a natural place. There's the perfect humidity, perfect temperature. There's water and drippings. It's just a gorgeous place. And the microflora that happens in this cave is imparting itself on the cheese as it ages. So what we have here is a 12-month Gruyere, a 12-month Emmentaler, and our brand new baby, the Kaltbach Gouda.
So it's so Gouda.
It's so Gouda. And I love the Gouda. It's got a beautiful black patina on it.
Patina?
Just, yeah.
Patina?
Yeah, just, hey, throwing it out there. And this coloration, it really is just from the cave. And the cheeses, they kind of work together in the in the cave. Like the Gruyere microbes talk to the Emmentaler and vice versa. So they're all kind of very unique to this cave environment.
Hang on. I got to stop you right there. I thought that was waxed.
No.
There's not. That's not wax on it. It's opaque. For our listeners at home, we'll put a picture up. But this cheese is, I mean, it is opaque and shiny, and it looks like it's been dipped in black cheese wax.
No,
but that's
no,
all
no.
from aging.
There might be a little bit of food plast on it just to kind of stabilize it.
Right.
But no, that's
beautiful.
The actual color of the
cheese. Wow.
Yep. That is so cool. Very so how long does it take to get that color?
About 3 months.
That's it.
Yeah. It's 3 months with our cheese facility, and then another 3 months in the cave, and then boom, it's black.
Wow, that's amazing.
Blew my
that's
mind.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I would have never guessed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But some of the Kaltbach cheeses do not turn black.
So here's what I just found out recently. So the Emmentaler, whatever the bacteria or the makeup in the Emmentaler is really responsible for colorizing all of the other cheeses that are in there.
Huh.
So that's why it's important to save Emmentaler. Make sure you buy Emmentaler, because if we run out of Emmentaler cheese, then we're going to have some color problems across the board.
Should we eat them to save them?
Yes, eat Emmentaler. Not only for our Kaltbach caves, but for the dairy farmers and everyone else out there, gotta support the Emmentaler. But anyway, Gruyere, by the Gruyere cheese, they actually take some of the black off of it. It's kind of a rule from the interprofession, so they just kind of want it to remain a certain color. But our other cheese, which is in here, Cremeaux, that's also a dark brown color. And for just from whatever reasons, you know, some cheeses react differently, but the Gouda just took to the color.
So interesting.
Yeah. And then the last guy on the table is a classic, the Tête de Mans.
Showstopper.
So underappreciated, so underutilized, I feel like, in our market. Cheesemongers, if you're listening, order some Tête de Mans for the holidays. It's the cheese that you just put on the girolle, you curl it, you make these beautiful little florets.
You just put it on the girolle. Can you explain that, please?
I just put it on one of our catering stations, because it's just so
great. Oh, yay!
So good. It's happening.
The girolle, it's a curler, essentially. The Tête de Mans is a 2-pound cylinder, and you place it on this wooden platform, and there's a scraper at the top of it, and you just turn the scraper and it scrapes off to make this little flour. Tête de Mans is a stinky one. It's an intense cheese, so by aerating it, you're kind of introducing a whole new element to it and just making it a little easier to kind of manage, I think.
Yeah.
And it's just pretty. It can be put on salads or on little bruschettas or anything like that. It's perfect. It's a perfect holiday cheese.
And there's like a little skill to getting it to make that perfect flour with the girolle. Can you explain
pro
tips?
And sometimes, you know, I leave out the girolle at parties and I come back to it. I'm like, what happened? They think they're supposed to like slice it. Or it's like so hacked up. I'm like, oh no, I should have had instructions. but it's just kind of like a pressure and a quick turn. It's kind of like you don't want to push down too hard because then you're going to get this like clumpy, chunky slice of cheese. So it's kind of like a gentle pressure with quick motion around.
It's sort of like the hand crank ice cream churner. If like the Cuisinart that you scrape like a little bit of frozen stuff off the side at a time and you have to kind of keep it going. And like I feel like that thin layer of ice cream that you scrape off is about like the layer of cheese that you're trying to get.
Totally.
With this guy too.
Takes a little practice, but
We should have like a Tête de Mans competition, like who can make the best flowers.
Longest curls.
I'm in.
Longest curls. You can do different categories.
Yeah.
This has legs. All right, Dan. Tell us about these ciders. You brought some really interesting
stuff. Yeah, I brought a pretty big diversity of ciders today. I just kind of went through and paired them all just now. So
can we do like a guided tasting? I mean, I'm just asking for a friend. Yeah. But can we do a tasting pairing of cheese and cider while you talk about the ciders?
So I kind of paired the cheeses and ciders just now, and then they work pretty well. I'm going to start with the Gruyere because I think the cider makes the most sense. We are drinking the Rose Hill Cherry Cider. It's a new producer up in the Hudson Valley. It's all native yeast, no sulfur, very natural wine style of cider. It's culinary apples and a variety of sweet and sour cherries from 2018. And it's kind of like, it's very baking spices and things like that. And it's really great with it.
Quick question, Dan.
Yeah.
Why would you want to use culinary apples in a mix with cherries? I would think you'd want to go more bitter.
You could. I think that this one has enough. The cherries, they have a little bit of pit in them too as well, so they end up being kind of bitter.
Okay.
But at the same time, I think they offer that nice bit of fruit and aromatics because these cherries are not particularly very sweet cherries. That most of them are ballotone sour cherries that end up being very like pretty austere and tart and it's showing less so today. When I had a cider last week, it was very like tasted like cloves and allspice, and it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think it's nice with the Gruyere. The next one I did was with the Gouda. I think this is the Floral Terrains from Long Island. This is the Outlands from last year. It's a blend of foraged apples from Long Island.
Hold on, I still have a little of the pink. Wait, I need to get a bite of Gruyere to go with this.
Oh, I just stepped on it.
Yeah, there we go.
Thanks, dude. Logistics. Yeah. There's a lot of logistics involved in really this tasting.
You want to do
that? Yeah, sure. I'll take a little bit of that.
This is the Floral Terrains. This is a really cool cider from Long Island. It's all foraged apples. It has this really kind of cool kind of light aromatic bitter flavors to it as well. And kind of like a lot of like herbs and dried fruits, oregano and stuff like that. And I think it works well with the kind of dried fruits and herbs of the Gouda as well. I think they kind of pair really well together. Then I brought a can of Shillings from the West Coast. This is a Seattle producer. This is an oak cider. It has a pretty good amount of sweetness to it still. And it's very like, it kind of has very much more like very American oak sweet flavors to it. I think it's really good with kind of the sweet flavors in the Emmenthaler. So I kind of paired those things together. And then with the Funk and the Tête de Moine, I paired it with Ancho's Commonwealth Cider. Ancho's a really awesome cidery in D.C. They use apples from all over the country and all over the world to make some really unique ciders in really unique ways. This cider is called Commonwealth. These are all apples from Virginia, mostly from the Shenandoah and Nelson County in Southern Virginia, along the Appalachian Mountains. This is a blend of Gold Rush, which is a pretty modern culinary variety. It's a very high sugar variety. It's very like, as an apple, it's one of the last to ripen of the year. Like here in New York, it ripens in like almost near Thanksgiving. Mm. It was only released commercially in the late 90s, so it's pretty recent in terms of apples wise, but it's a really fun performance for cider making, especially in Virginia. And the other variety in this is called Harrison. So it has a lot of lush fruit from the Gold Rush. And the Harrison is a really amazing variety. It's a variety originally from New Jersey. It's actually from Newark, New Jersey originally.
Really?
Yeah, Newark, wow. Newark, New Jersey used to be the like centralized, was one of the few places in the country that made cider on a commercial scale in the United States, like on a large scale.
That's a wild one.
That's so crazy because we did the whole series about the Newtown Pippin with you.
Yeah.
Because the Newtown Pippin apple originated very close to our studio here in Bushwick. And so I didn't know there was another super important cider apple coming from Newark. That's so cool.
Newark used to be, in the early 19th century, it was all apple orchards. Like you call it the oranges below like the mountains outside of Newark. And it was all orchards at one point in time. Orange and County. It was, they basically grew four different varieties that were controlled that each family had different variety that they grew. And Newark cider was something they would export around the country. So you see ads of it, especially in the Southeast. Mm. In like North Carolina, even in California, are people selling like champagne style cider that's from Newark, New Jersey, but being sold off ships in San Francisco and places like that.
That's
in
wild.
Like the Gold Rush.
Cool.
So, but that variety was basically lost. And it was rediscovered in the 1970s by a guy named Paul Gadiz. Discovered it. He's a horticulturalist apple guy from Vermont. And it's somehow, yada, 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 things happened. He identified it. It's kind of contentious history in terms of the claimings of how it has all happened. But anyway, a guy named Tom Burford, who is the was a really important guy in terms of apples of Monticello. He wrote a book called Apples of the South. That's called Apples of North America, something like that, mostly about Southern apples. And he promoted it very heavily amongst orchards and cider producers throughout the Southeast United States. So it's grown commercially there today, and it's a really amazing, cool, bitter, sharp variety that's grown at scale here in the United States. It's grown a little bit in New Jersey now, but it's mostly in commercially, it's mostly found in Virginia. Hmm. It's a really cool cider.
I'm sorry, Kat, did you have a question?
You go ahead.
I want to know, Dan, is Virginia having a cider renaissance, or has it been going on?
It's the same as New York, okay, in terms of its journey. There's a lot of new producers happening in Virginia. Most of them are around Charlottesville. They kind of tag on to the wine tourism around Charlottesville, Virginia. Mm-hmm. But there's a pretty rich apple history on both sides of the Blue Ridge Mountains. In like Albemarle and Nelson County, a lot of apple orchards. And then on the other side in the Shenandoah is a lot of Golden Delicious and things like that. They grow for a lot of big commercial juice plants in Winchester, Virginia, that have people are now investing more into making cider out of those things because no one drinks apple juice anymore.
So,
I like apple juice.
Except for Sarah.
Every now and then.
So Hannah and I have been doing a lot of cider-related things lately. We're working on a cider project. You'll hear about it soon. And we've heard sort of two, I think, narratives, and I'm not sure. Like, I just want to get your thoughts on them. One is that sort of chance seedlings and like rediscovering these apples is sort of like the frontier of cider. But then the other side of it, we were at Cornell, and it's like, oh, we're going to make these new hybrids and we're going to sort of invent new apples. And that's the frontier of cider. Mm. What do you think?
Like, it's a bit of both. There's no like one cider narrative for the United States. There's a multitude of many narratives for how people adapt and do things. In the Northwest, especially in the Puget Sound, they do really well with a lot of the English varieties. Like Dabinet and Major don't do so well. They grow fine here in the Northeast. People do them, but not really well, as well as they do on the Pacific Northwest. Because those apples are from a pretty wet maritime climate along the coast of England and France. And it's the same climate you're going to find over in the Northwest. So every part of the country has different things. So you talk to people down like in Virginia or in Arizona, and it's not necessarily the same path that's going to make sense for us at Cornell. It's not going to make the same sense for people in around the country. So it's not one reason of how we're going to do this thing. Mm-hmm. It's not just like, because there is that Cornell research trying to find new varieties and graft and breed and find things. And then people are also just trying to sort through Mother Nature's work and figuring out what's already out there, what might exist out there, what could exist out there. There's a lot of really cool seedling projects happening where people are cultivating seedlings and seeing what works in their environment. And some of those varieties are now commercially viable. Like you can buy through the Fedco catalog, which is a amazing Maine heritage.
Yeah. I spent 4 hours with the Fedco tree catalog yesterday.
It's an amazing thing. but now Fedco offers about six or seven different seedling trees through their catalog. You can get Bitter Pew and Gnarled Chapman, which are all varieties there from the Northeast here that were really good cider varieties, but are but work well here in the Northeast. They're not going to have the same issues and problems that you might find. They grow more like wild trees and pretty hardy and resilient rather than trying to grow a cultivated variety.
Yeah, if you've ever tried to grow a thing in Maine, you know it's not the easiest.
Yeah, so these things work and they're tested and they're very good varieties both as a grower and as a fermenter and a drinker.
They have also, this year I think, expanded into more peri pears.
Yeah.
Which is cool. They're like identifying, which pears are particularly good for peri, and they have a huge crabapple section.
It's crazy.
I just read the thing cover to cover.
It's an amazing catalog.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah, it's an amazing catalog. There's I spent a weekend at John Bunker, who helped organize the Apple section of that, and it's the most, it's an entrancing thing to read.
I'm always fascinated by just like how cool Apple names are. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask a question, but then I'm going to throw it a break because I think it's going to require some thought. Is if you got to name a new apple varietal, what would you name it? And this is a question for everybody, not just Dan. So let's go to a break, and we're going to come back and talk apple varietals. We're going to talk about the events you guys have coming up, talk to Sarah some more about Yellow Magnolia Cafe, and then we're going to play some trivia. So hold on. We'll be right back.
Great.
Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th, for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Join us to explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, where you'll taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Join the party. Tickets are available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super-duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Thank you, Roberta's. We're back with HRN Happy Hour. So before the break, I said let's come up with what you would name your apple varietal. I was going to leave it super open-ended and just like get creative with it. But Hannah pointed out we should play a game with it, and we should...
I just really like structure.
I was gonna say, we need a framework. Yes.
The framework we came up with was the stripper name equivalent of apples.
Yes.
I'm into it.
So we decided that it would be a street you have lived on and your favorite color. That combination would be the name of your apple hybrid or chance varietal seedling you discovered. So who wants to start?
I'll go first.
Mine. It's like Dan looks Dan ready.
I thought of mine.
I'm already ready.
Ready.
Too,
I don't know, it's Sawmill Orange.
That's a great apple name.
Are you sure that's not already an apple?
Dan Pucci.
Well, it's also like sort of encroaching on mine too, which is Amsterdam Yellow. It's pretty good, right? Also, Yellow Magnolia Cafe. I just saw that one too. Yellow is actually my favorite color. Not to wear.
That's not to wear?
No, and I don't.
Just observe.
Yes, exactly.
It's a good color.
Be immersed in, if you will. I look terrible in yellow.
I'm just also laughing because somebody just walked by to have their seat at Roberta's and just looked so jealously at our spread. Sorry.
Can't have it.
Mine's the Ponus Chartreuse.
Oh. Ooh,
chartreuse. You fancy.
Ooh. Wow.
Mine is Gina Rose Gold.
Ooh. Could also be like a silent movies actress. Yeah. Hannah?
See, I moved a lot when I was growing up, so I'm trying to pick like the quaintest street I lived on. I think Cottakill Mustard.
That's wow.
That's good.
I'm also allergic to apples, as we were discussing earlier, so my apple breed is itchy mouth.
You could go very bold and find a very non-quaint name as well.
Scratchy throat. It's called Hives.
Yeah. Here, lean in.
Okay. Amy has one.
Okay, so mine is Linden Magenta.
Ooh,
that's a good one.
Yeah. Fancy. I think mine would be Colby Sienna. That sounds like an indie singer, though.
That's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also work as a stripper name, too.
Can you introduce yourself, too?
Yeah, hi.
We have newcomers to this show.
I'm Ella. I'm Ruby's sister.
Ruby's one of our interns.
I'm the intern sister. I didn't know what this was, and I'm pleasantly surprised. Learning so much about cheese. Ruby and I grew up on the same block, so it would probably be Henry and then Teal. I don't know.
I'm going to go with Pinehurst Indigo because that was our second
spray. Oh, I forgot about Pinehurst. We now live on Pinehurst. Yeah. Now I'm boring, but whatever.
I feel like we should continue this and like start like a Twitter trend.
Yeah.
But we also have to have another naming thread, which is what is Baby Gill's podcast? If anybody saw the really sweet picture of Michael Harlan Trickell with his new 10-week-old baby Gill, he has his little headphones on in the picture in the studio. It's like really cute.
I had
like
an idea.
We have to name the baby podcast.
I had an idea. If we wanted Gill to have a podcast about like Brooklyn and like New York food, it could be called Gill Filtafish.
That's a good name.
Gill's
Filtafish. Gill's
strong name.
I put my vote in for the burp report because that's the all he was doing when he was here was my like little tiny baby burps.
You know how difficult it is to get a baby to burp?
Gill was a champ.
Yeah.
Some babies, man.
And apparently not all babies.
Me and Katie. Get
Well, Bucci, you have a new baby.
Yeah, she's like 15 weeks now.
Well, how's her burping?
How's her burping?
It burps pretty well.
Oh, man. It's just mine.
Strong burp. She burps strong pretty burper. Strong, yeah.
Bop, ba, da, bop, the burp report.
I think we just did.
I can do an hour and a half of that. No
I'm
problem.
Pretty sure that just happened, yeah.
Yeah, give me enough cider and cheese. I'm on it.
Okay, so Allison and Dan, tell us about the events that you have coming up that involve all this amazing cheese and cider.
Sure.
Sure, yeah. We're doing some Star Chefs events next week.
Cool. Star Chefs is an industry event. So it's the International Chefs Conference. So it's meant to be like an international symposium. From chefs and food industry people from all around the world, all around the country. And they come to this conference. There's some great conferences, and then there's the products fair, which Emmy Cheese will be at. And then as a sponsor, we get to do cool events with Dan and other fun seminars and tastings. So, Dan is going to work with us. So, Dan, you want to
talk about? Yeah, we have a bunch of cool cocktail night on four, and we have this really awesome... we have a really awesome thing we're working with. And we're doing this awesome event on Tuesday, which is going to be about like pairing cider with food and cider with cheeses, and cider with food with cheese in it and cider. So it's going to be this whole big thing. It's going to be pretty awesome. And kind
what
of talking
food
about
with cheese in it. Are you showcasing just out of curiosity?
What
food with cheese in it?
Cheese,
are you?
It's going to be a salad. And it can be a porchetta as well.
Ooh.
They both have the
tell
Gruyere.
Tell us about the incorporation of the cheese.
Yeah.
I'm not the one making the food.
Talk more about that.
You roll it up, you cook it, and then it's got cheese in it.
Is the cheese in the rolled up parts of the porchetta?
I think it is in the rolled up
parts. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm like, we're going to be surprised.
The chef doing the food, and we're not doing the food.
You know, it's like one of those things where I just sent the cheese to the chef, and I was just like, you just do your magic.
Yeah, have fun.
I'm not gonna get involved. I'm going to be surprised.
So we're doing... I think those are both with the Gruyere. And then we have the Tête de Moine and the new Gouda by themselves. We have four different ciders we're pairing with, which would be really fun to kind of taste. Really nice diversity of styles, kind of like this one as well. We're going to kind of highlight the points. My point I want to make here is that I don't think that cheese and cider end up getting pigeonholed into a lot of roles. People think of cider being... cheese ends up getting relegated either before the meal or after the meal and not really throughout the meal. And I think cider ends up getting pigeonholed into the brief period of the fall right now, or like before dinner, not necessarily with food. So I think there's a really cool link between the two worlds here of how we can talk about these two beverage and the food as appreciate them and to have a greater appreciation of the two products and how they can work well together and work well throughout with the rest of the ingredients on the menu.
And Team Emmy is also really great at pushing the limits of the cheese course, because also last fall we had a chocolate cake with raclette on it after having also fondue and raclette and other like salad with cheese and multiple other courses. And I had never had raclette on dessert before.
That's amazing.
But I wasn't mad.
It was
absurd. Dessert just sounded a lot better with cheese.
I know. Well, because you have your cheese. Like if my preferred dessert is cheese.
Yeah, me as well.
But also like... chocolate cake.
No, I'm not mad at it at all.
I was good. Yeah.
I think
I did have to lie down for like 10 hours after. eating all that cheese.
Like 2 days.
Yeah.
If I provide the chocolate cake.
Well, there's going to be a raclette.
Yeah. Okay, I was going to say, you provide the raclette.
We're going to have like the secret menu of the HRN gala.
Excellent.
Like In-N-Out style.
Behind the scenes. Like
I'll have one for dessert, raclette, animal style.
Exactly.
I think with cheese too, like for in terms of like getting it into the food service arena, you know, it's always kind of the supporting role in a dish, and sometimes it needs to be the star of the show, like on the raclette. Yeah, the raclette on the chocolate cake.
For me, it's always the star.
And even to Dan's point earlier about cheese and cider kind of getting pigeonholed, like, yeah, sometimes, you know, there's certain cheeses that I'll only have in the fall because it's kind of like a seasonal thing for me. Like Gruyere is my... It's a kind of like, you know, you put your sweaters on and you put your Gruyere, you know, on your plate. It's kind of like a thing. Cider, too. Like, you know, summertime, I'm drinking cocktails and beer. Wintertime, I get my dark reds and my cider. So I think, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. And to just kind of think about these things all year round and how they can be incorporated is really something we want to try and promote.
Sarah, can we put you on the spot and ask you to come up with a dish for one of the cheeses on the table?
Oh, whoa. Sorry, I was actually thinking that we did an apple dinner last night or an autumn dinner where we did a cider pairing, and mm-hmm. I was actually thinking more about the cheese than... I mean, for me, cheese is just the numero uno. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's sort of disappointing because I think I actually have some dairy aversion, which is a huge
blow. Our cheese is lactose-free.
Well... This is good news for me. Things are about to get a lot more interesting here, guys. I actually think I have to take it out of my diet, but this is excellent news for me. I mean, for me, I always want to highlight cheese. So I want cheese to be the star. So when
oh my God, yay!
It's really my most, I love cheese is something that I say like constantly and always. And every time I have a piece of cheese, I'm like, oh. I can't take it out of my diet. I mean, I think I would want to pick a cheese. I mean, yes, you can put me on the spot, but the answer is I'm involved in the cheese already.
Can I throw out an idea?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Maybe, I mean, I love that you're doing a vegan dish for the gala because, like, we need some vegan options.
Well, that's what I was
folks.
About to say.
Yeah.
There would be cheese in my dish if we...
But what if we, like, do a tête de moine garnish for people that want the cheese on
sure.
their risotto?
I mean... Once again, guys, I am always down for cheese. Like, let me preface that when anyone asks me what my favorite things to eat, I will tell you bread and cheese. And if one of them has to go, the bread goes. Like cheese.
Yes.
Like, cheese. Like that is my jam. So, yes, I am delighted to have tête de moine, or any type of cheese, quite frankly, to finish it. Just trying to keep it vegan to keep it plant-based, but
right. our vegan guests will be very happy.
I am delighted.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Can we go back to making sure that the raclette stays?
the raclette actually is microbial rennet, so that could work for the vegans.
I'm into it. And I mean, if you're next to us, then I can just keep filling out my individual pumpkin.
Oh, but dairy, yes.
The milk. I know, dairy is a problem. But I like the idea of having the option of it. Once again, if the world was at my disposal, everybody would have the option for cheese. Always. Add cheese is the move. But, yeah, I would love it.
Add cheese, hashtag.
Hashtag add cheese.
That's my new slogan.
We've actually been dipping our tête de moine, like, curls, if you will, into, like, a little hibiscus dust to make it.
Yes.
Ooh,
I've
like,
seen that. We've done
yeah,
that
it's
before.
A little bit of, like, a...
People go crazy
purple edge, if you
yeah,
will.
Yeah, it looks like a carnation.
It's very pretty. Yeah, I'm 100% we can add cheese.
Always
right.
add cheese.
No problem. It will finish with nutritional yeast as a cheese substitute and actually some, you know, house-made vegan cheese. Once again, let's get that purple barley
yeah.
in and
yeah.
see we, how we go. But
we all lack restraint around here.
I have yeah. zero boundaries when it comes to cheese. Like, literally, I actually actively try not to keep cheese in my house because at 2 a.m., cheese will find me. And I will be like, I need an 8-minute snack. Let me just have a little piece of cheese. And one little piece of cheese turns us into all of the cheese. It's
and
a problem.
The tête de moine is so exciting. Just like, oh, it's just a little bit.
Just a scrape. Just one turn. No, nope.
Like it's so like
six
wafer
turns.
Thin.
That's exactly right. And then the next thing you know, it's down. This is why I actually try not to keep cheese in my house. I'm not going through a good moment right now. But yes, I'm a cheese not longer a lover.
Well, you've met the right.
You're in trouble next now. To each other,
you're
guys.
In trouble.
Please rearrange the floor plan so we can be next to each other.
One way that we can offer to help you out of this dark place is with a joke that Kat told
okay,
us yesterday.
I'm great.
I was like, please.
Do you want, this is not related, but it is funny.
It's, it's just better. To bring us out of the dark place.
Out of the dark place of my cheese hole, if you will.
Okay. The joke is, what is a werewolf's favorite sauce?
Howl. No, I don't.
Hollandaise.
You're on the right track.
Hollandaise is good. I think that one wins.
Just wait. It's actually a bechamel because it starts with aroo.
Sorry, it took me a real minute to get that.
It somehow works better when it's written down. You're like, oh, I see.
I love it.
It just took me a minute.
Okay, well, it's that time, guys. The joke's over, and it's time for trivia.
Oh, no. No more joking around.
No more jokes, guys. All right. The trivia this week was written by our amazing intern, HC, who happens to be a cheesemonger.
Oh, Lord.
And maker.
And make cheesemaker is what I should have said. You're right. So this trivia is going to be from the point... Each question is from the point of view of a cheese, and you have to tell me what cheese I am.
Okay.
All right?
One of us has the advantage, right?
Number one, I'm a washed curd cheese. The color of the wax I'm wrapped in can tell you if I'm made of cow's milk or goat's milk. And it's one of the cheeses that we had here, but this cheese is a wild card.
A wax?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a Gouda?
It's a Gouda.
That's what I was going to say.
It's
got to
be Gouda.
This Gouda has, like, broken that mold, pun intended.
That's a Gouda one.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, that's a rough pun.
Sorry.
So I guess typically orange and yellow waxes mean cow cheese, and white and blue waxes mean goat cheese.
Goat, yes.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yep.
Okay.
The more you know.
I'm a cheese enthusiast, but this helps me.
All right, next one is I'm made... by letting curds knit back together at the bottom of the cauldron, scooped out and hung to drain before being pressed into wheels. The wheels are then soaked in brine for 24 hours before aging.
Oh.
That could be a lot of things.
Cheddar?
No.
I was going to think more along the lines of like a ricotta salata, but I don't know if that's right.
That's close.
When it says hung, I think of like, isn't it Caciocavallo that has
the scarmozzas? Like
scarmozzas, yeah. Scarmozzas, yeah. My family is scarmozzas.
You're all very close to the answer.
Is it an Italian cheese?
But that's not the right answer.
Yeah. Is it fontina? Like
yes. It's a parmesan.
Hey, parmesan.
Okay.
Okay, next one. I date back from the year 879 CE. During aging, I'm poked with metal rods to make airways for mold growth.
Blue.
Like a Roquefort?
Close.
Did he say it? Roquefort?
No. I mean...
Is it a blue cheese?
It sounds like it.
Oh, Stilton? No?
I feel you guys got it. It's a Gorgonzola.
That's Italian, yeah. Gorgonzola, that's a specific time. Okay.
Yeah. Blue cheese.
We're really close.
You're there.
Solid A minus, maybe.
All right, next one.
Not a cheesemonger.
I'm a cheese with many imitators, but if you're in the U.S., you have likely never tasted the real AOC version of me because I'm a raw milk cheese aged only 3 weeks.
Oh, wait. I have an idea.
Go for it.
Is it Robiola?
No.
Oh.
It's French.
Oh, I probably missed that part. I just got hung up on the Italian cheeses.
A camembert?
Yes.
That's what I was thinking.
Camembert.
Excellent. Last one. I'm a fresh cheese that dates back to 6,000 BCE. I am most often made using lemon juice as the acidifier.
Ricotta.
Yeah, ricotta.
No.
What?
Mozzarella.
Different country.
Oh.
Feta cheese?
Nope.
Acidifier.
Cottage cheese?
Yummy.
Curdle?
Does that even count? Sag paneer. I gave you the answer.
Oh, paneer.
Paneer. I was like, that's the answer. That's okay, though.
That was a giveaway.
It's a great cheese.
It is a great cheese.
Those are all great cheeses.
Yeah.
You can't pick a favorite.
It's really hard to have a bad cheese. That's not true. But nonetheless, cheese enthusiast.
Guys.
But I would still eat the bad cheese.
You won trivia.
Yay. Oh. We win.
I thought we got a...
Yeah, that's a C plus.
On a B?
A you cheese pass. Plus.
A B.
C for cheese.
This class Round is pass up. Fail.
Cheese.
Well, that was great. Thank you all for playing. Thank you all for being here and for eating cheese and drinking cider with us.
Thank you for the cheese and the cider.
You're welcome.
Yum.
Can't wait to have more of it at the gala.
I was about to say, come to the gala.
I think we should reiterate that the tickets for the gala are at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
G-A-L-A.
Come eat cheese with us.
Welcoming all pumpkin hollowers.
Yes. Call us. If you have excellent vegetable butchery skills, please send us an email at info@heritageradionetwork.org.
Bring your own melon baller and line up.
B-Y-O-M-B.
Yeah. It's the thing.
Yeah.
That's what you do now. Thank you so much to our guests, Sarah, Allison, Dan, Amy. Thank you to our engineer, Amanda.
Very welcome.
Whoop, whoop, whoop. Thank you to our guests in studio, Ruby and Remy, your name?
Ella.
Ella. Ruby and Ella.
Yay.
Thanks to Hannah, Katie.
Thank you, Kat.
Thank you. We'll be back sometime. I don't know if we're back next week.
Are we back?
I honestly can't tell you.
I think, like, chances are we'll be back next week with another episode of Nature and Happy Hour.
But there won't be cheese.
There might be.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I think we are.
I'm going to leave you enough so you'll have...
Oh, well, cheese.
For you there.
Yeah. Our guest next week is cheese.
Yes.
Thanks so much for listening to HR and Happy Hour. We will see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.